Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Monday, February 26, 2024. We got a great show for you today. My name is Magnus Tiewald, and joining me today is...
Peter Haskell. Peter Raymond Haskell.
Just to be specific, eh?
Well, sounds better. It's like Charles Foster Kane. Sounds better than Charles Kane.
We are starting a special three-part series today on Speak Up. Called The Seventh Artists on Radio. We'll be getting to that in just a few moments. But it's a three-part radio series featuring a number of First Nations artists in discussion with some First Nations arts experts. And it is a series produced by the Orr Galleries and the SFU Galleries, and brought to you here on CJSF. And we're very pleased to be doing that. We're going to get going with the first section of that in just a few moments. Part two will air tomorrow at 10 o'clock, and part three on Thursday, also at 10 o'clock, as part of this special series. Later in the program, though, Peter is going to be talking about something about the roots of Donald Trump.
In 1991, there was a documentary about Donald Trump that they tried to present on cable television, but was sort of blocked by him for legal reasons. But it was placed online in 2015. So it says his ongoing things he did during the 1980s. And I have a few points, but it's called Trump, What's the Deal?
Great.
And if you want to access it, it's quite easy. Put Trump, What's the Deal into Google. Donald Trump documentary 1991 is one good way of getting it.
And we'll be having that conversation at about 10:45 in about 40-some minutes. First, though, we are going to bring you The Seventh. This special three-part series with artists Lauren Brevner and James Harry in conversation with Rick Harry, Cease Weiss, and Aaron Nelson Moody is moderated by Orr Gallery Director Jen Jackson and is a discussion about a gallery presentation also curated by Jen Jackson. As I say, this is part one today. We are going to air part two tomorrow and part three on Thursday, all just a couple of minutes after 10 o'clock. So here is The Seventh Artists on Radio.
But also our commitment to support the capacity of art to unsettle these conditions. We would like to welcome each of you to this really special panel today. And I'm very grateful for the vision of Jen Jackson, the Orr Gallery Director, in creating this partnership for our program today. Now I'll welcome Jen Jackson to speak. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this beautiful afternoon for the seventh panel conversation on Coast Salish Design Principles in Intersectional Collaboration with artists James McCullis, Willacton Rick Harry, Tetsnet Cease Weiss will be joining us shortly, and Aaron Nelson Moody, also known as Splash. Our wonderful colleague and friend, artist Lauren Bremner, and the star of the show, Baby Hannah, are unable to join us today as they are under the weather. I am Jen Jackson. My pronouns are she, her. I am the director at Orr Gallery and the curator of the Seven. It is an honor to be here today and to welcome stories of the land from our esteemed panelists. The stories that will be shared this afternoon offer an active and ongoing acknowledgement that the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples and territories are timeless, that the rich and culturally diverse descendants of this territory are always in dialogue with the Hunkaminos and Squamish voices that echo upon the land. Today, artists will discuss Coast Salish design principles and intersectional collaboration as it relates to Lauren and James' exhibition Seven, on view at Orr Gallery until February 10, 2024. Together, they will discuss the exhibition's principles of Indigenous representation and land-based gestures in contemporary art. The conversation that we will share today acknowledges calls for Indigenous sovereignty across and in solidarity with communities near and far. It offers an opening for discussion on the ways that we can stand with each other and direct our voices to powerful change. Lauren and James have been collaborators since 2014. Lauren's practice is deeply inspired by her Japanese and Trinidadian heritage, while James' practice combines traditional Squamish histories, forms, and designs. They create meditative compositions that invite cross-cultural dialogue and embrace multiple expressions of personal, political, social, and spiritual practices. Their work ranges from large-scale public art to intimate portraits, incorporates a wide breadth of materials, and engages in bridging community through generous relationality. As Lauren and James worked together on the Seventh, they spent time with elders, knowledge keepers, and storytellers in their communities. We are honored to have their family here with us today and to share a welcome song led by one of their most influential mentors and generous supporters, James's father, Squamish artist and master carver, Willacton. Willacton, welcome and thank you for being here.
Osea, it's already been acknowledged that Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Musqueam, but the song we would like to share is coming from Kotlacha. Kotlacha, we call it Chief Stein Baker. It's my mother's uncle, so it would be my granduncle. And he called this his welcome song. Hey,
thank you, Lachman, Aaron, and James. Lachman, your generosity and teachings reverberate deeply in my own understanding of Lauren and James's work. We raise our hands to you, to the light that you bring to each of us today, and to the spirit that you bring to the room and always keeping a smile on our faces. Thank you. We'll now invite James to give us a 20-minute presentation on Coast Salish design principles. Following the presentation, we'll have a brief 10-minute intermission, and then we'll invite our esteemed panelists to share a conversation together.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming this afternoon. We've been working on this body of work for the last year. We've dedicated pretty well a whole year to creating this work, all kind of stemming from the idea of like where Coast Salish art comes from, trying to explore this form that has almost gone extinct. My dad appeared to be one of the generation to really bring it back to the public eye in a way that has really made a lasting impact. So a lot of my work is actually stemming from his practice as well as Slash as well, because my dad has mentored a lot of other artists, Slash being one of them, and it's been such an honor and privilege to grow up being able to be surrounded by so many great artists and thinkers and really change makers around bringing our culture back, because there's been a huge desire for people now, especially within the last decade, to really change and shift how we look at it traditionally, but also how we can look at it moving forward in a more contemporary context. So my presentation here is actually aimed around sort of the philosophy and design language of Salish art, just to give you guys a little bit of context and background to where Lauren and I's collaborations are, and really just how much work it takes to kind of go into how to study the forms. And you know, I myself have taken the time to learn my dad pretty well my whole life to learn these forms. So I put in the work to understand the design language, to then shift it and change it into more contemporary context. So I'll just start off by going around on the territories and giving a little bit of background knowledge. So a lot of people coming to Canada or on the Pacific Northwest for the first time, a lot of the time they see a lot of prominent figures such as totem poles. In fact, I think I can safely say that most of the world knows this part of the world for totem poles. And that's really been a lot of the heart of what I'm trying to change as well, because this is, these are sort of describing First Nations people that aren't from this territory. And I think a lot of that issue too is that there's just so few of us to be pushing our artwork out into the world. And you know, it's really just starting to grasp in a more recent times where we're getting more of our work out here. That not shown in here is actually Susan Point's, I guess it was the two house posts and the beam that was recently done in light of this. But even in that, I don't think that's necessarily enough. So I want to give some more context in this, because you know, we are, I know that Vancouver is pretty a big, it's a cultural hub for BC. So I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing so many different types of First Nations artwork represented on our land. A lot of it's also partly due to institutions commissioning agencies, commissioning artworks by artists such as Bill Reid and Jim Hart, that very prominent artists of their time, to display artworks in these locations. And particularly these pieces being of the Musqueam territory. And I know that there's a lot of back and forth between that. In fact, I know that my dad had recently worked with the O'Day Museum up in Whistler, that being a Jim Hart piece going up where he constructed and created the base so that the height artwork didn't touch Salish Pond, and sort of that being the starting conversation of, hey, guys, this really shouldn't be the artwork that's represented on our territory. Because historically speaking, you would look at these and they would be marking your territory in some regard. Your crests or your family crests would be represented on the totem pole, and you would marry into a family. You might create a new totem pole in regards to more people being introduced to your family, so you would add in those family crests. And these often would be found on waterfronts for people as you're passing by, so you know whose territory that you're paddling up to. Whereas here, we did it quite different. We actually had welcome figures with their hands out. You know, if you guys go to Ambleside Beach in West Van, we have a welcome figure out on the ocean front, welcoming people in. So we didn't actually carve totem poles on our ocean fronts. They are, in fact, found on the inside of our big houses. So just a map of Coast Salish. So this is a map of Coast Salish design areas where Coast Salish people would practice Coast Salish design. So it would span as far north as parts of Vancouver Island. We're actually our family on our grandmother's side in another bay called Kudal or Kukwakuwak, where it was a mix. And correct me if I'm wrong while I'm speaking. Namgis as well. So it's where it was more of a help me out here. A mix, because I don't want to say the wrong thing. Namgis is a mix between Kukwakuwak and Coast Salish. So there was a lot of intermarriages in between different nations, which added to the complexity of what that would mean when we're creating artwork here. Because on my dad's mom's side, my grandma, she's Kukwakuwak, so we actually did practice carving totem poles from that territory. But on my grandpa's side, his dad, he was Squamish, so we do a little bit of both, and in more recent times, and I've been following after my dad's practice here too, is that we are only creating Coast Salish design because we're saying we're here on Coast Salish land. So we're not trying to practice our northern style as much, just because Salish style and Salish art is, like I was saying before, it almost gone extinct. So here's some examples of some house posts. Here on the left, that was a welcome figure I was speaking to earlier. And you can see an example of my dad's work here at the Squamish Lillooet Cultural Center, which is sort of a more contemporary take on a house post. And sort of taking examples of the past here, you can see at the top right. That the figures would have been represented on the inside of the big houses or the long houses, so they would have been architectural features to the houses themselves. And then here you see down here the comb design, and as well as the spindle whorl. And a lot of these examples are taken from things that are actually serve as functional purposes as well, as not just art, because we actually didn't have a word for art. So to go into understanding Coast Salish design, I want to give a brief sort of introduction to the design language, which only derives out of three different forms, the crescent, the circle, and the trigon. And at first, when I learned this from my dad, I found it quite difficult to find out how you create artwork using only three forms. But when you start to piece them together, you sort of get this directionality or this movement or flow through a piece, this being a really quite simplified version of a feather design. So it's more of like an abstract piece. But the energy from the artwork always starts from the center point in a direction, and everything sort of flows outwards from that. As sort of if you can imagine dropping a pebble in water, how there's that energy moving outwards in all directions. So that same sort of design principle would be used if you wanted to guide the eye through a piece. You might use those forms in sort of, if you want to form the arc, that's how you would use those forms. So I'd like to show this example side by side of a Neutronov here, Thunderbird on the left, and a Salish Thunderbird on the right. And both they're actually quite the opposite. So form line coming from Northern First Nations artwork is based on three forms that sort of are building blocks. So they're more built in the positive space rather than the negative space. So you take an ovoid form and you build upon that using various forms. It's basically, I did it in black and white to represent that you can imagine that the Thunderbird being the positive silhouette shape and the black being the areas where you pierce through or cut through. And we can see in this example here how they the forms are sort of, again, it's still bringing in that design philosophy of movement where you're still moving towards this directionality and using the forms to guide the eye in a specific way or a specific motion. And you can see examples here in of these old designs in these spindle whorls that the shapes and forms were used sort of in that same way where there was sort of a starting point of this energy and movement, and everything sort of moved outwards from that. So that brings me to conceptualizing Salish art and into a more modern context. So after taking these forms and design philosophies, I wanted to bring them into a practice that would bring them into a more bringing them from the negative into the positive as sculptural pieces. So it's more really, I look at these as studies of the forms. And they kind of, I think, it's sort of interesting if you think about these in terms of public art in the context of our city, is that we're taking the forms where, you know, our ancestors were observers of nature, we studied nature, and the artwork came out of the land. So in a way, these works, they come out of the land. It's like sort of that idea that it's having this conversation with it, that it's rooted and based in the Salish design that sort of has this conversation with the historical meaning of what it means to be here in this territory, and specific to the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh, we all sort of use the same design language to kind of understand how these forms, what they mean to us, because it's so interesting to think about how we're also so connected to these forms. And you know, for me at least, I know that journey has been trying to find why that's so important for me. And I wanted to really know how these forms came to be. So I just went back to the natural world and started studying the forms that came from the land. And then as you work through it, you can kind of understand the relationship, especially as you can scale these pieces up. You can see here the set scale, I'm thinking of this little person down here in the bottom, that it starts to have a different relationship to the viewer, that it kind of makes the person feel sort of places them in a state of wonder or awe, and then maybe then we can reflect back to you know, what it means to be living in this territory, what it means to conceptualize Salish art in a contemporary context. I like to use examples of architecture, and this one being Sanok going up Sideborough Ridge, where we can start to see Salish form utilized in the buildings themselves, and thinking about how, rather than just placing a piece of artwork on a plot of land, how we can think about integrating our design philosophy into the rest of the world, whether that be architecture, landscape architecture, or design. And some of these bids are kind of where these ideas are formulated and begin as a dream, and sometimes they come to life and sometimes they don't. This one being a concept that I did for the Burrard Bridge. The idea being that we take that circle form and sort of pierce through the architectural stature of the building, or the bridge, sorry, and then also thinking about the functionality of a space, this being a bus stop down the bottom left, and thinking how you can use the form to design architecture as a function, but still stay true to the Salish form language. And almost sort of imagine what, you know, with the use of different material and light and just sort of reimagine what our spaces could look like in our city. Now, a lot of this started for me when I was doing public art. It's actually how I met Jen Jackson, was through public art, and imagining how we could bring these forms. At the time, I was thinking this is the only way I can get more of our forms onto our land. But since then, we've been trying to discover or look through other ways, and that was sort of the show, the art show was taking that to the next level. But I really wanted to just give those brief overviews of those works, because it's sort of imagining with use of technology, giving people the idea of like how if an indigenous person was to design a place or design in our modern context, like we had the authorship to collaborate and work with architects and designers, what would our city look like? And that's kind of where a lot of my passion lies. But it's really trying to also imagine just like how you could use material in different forms. With working with my dad earlier on in life, we used to have so much access to yellow and red cedar, but as you know, in current day, we just don't have access to it anymore. So we've also sort of been forced into having to think through different mediums, just because the scarcity of old growth trees, you know. We wouldn't actually harm anything unless it was an old growth, because the grain and wood wouldn't be tight enough to carve. So it's almost sort of having to think about that in a different way. I wanted to bring this example up. This was a bid that I did for St. Paul's Hospital. Where the St. Paul's Hospital is actually being built on top of a vortex portal, squash ice. And in this bid, I really wanted to bring that story to life, because that was a really sacred space for the Squamish people. We have stories that date back thousands of years of our people hunting in that area. And we actually have a specific story of a hunter who was chasing down a sea lion, who actually had shot and harpooned the sea lion. And it had gotten away out of his sights, but he had been traveling about 6 months later from where he harpooned it in this location. He found it in Burnaby Lake. And that's how our people found out that there were underground tunnels linking from False Creek all the way to Burnaby. So, you know, our people have like all these really old sacred stories, and there's a lot of these opportunities that come up through bids like St. Paul's Hospital, where there's a real opportunity to bring those and shed light on those sacred stories.